To be truly happy, we need to experience, balance and create a synthesis between the high, mid-range, and lower frequencies that life affords us. Most people blame their unhappiness on the elements of their lives, Master Fuap said sympathetically. If they are unfulfilled, they assume it is because they don't have the right job, enough money or the right sexual partner. They believe that if the universe would only conform to their desires, and would give them everything they want, then they would be happy. But human beings cannot be happy, whether rich, poor or at any point in between, if they have cut themselves off from the magic of creation. Contemporary human beings have explained away the meaning of life with science and logic, without explaining anything at all. And what they have not been able to explain away, they have chosen either to ignore or to file away as being unimportant or irrelevant. Whenever a society chooses to ignore what it perceives as the incongruities or uncomfortable aspects of life, you will notice that problems with sexual obsession and violence often occur. Our failure to deal in a more positive and insightful way with any part of the life process is, more often than not, a sign of psychological and spiritual neurosis. All of life is holy, Master Fuap shouted happily. There is no such thing as sin. There is only ignorance, and that can easily be cured with inner knowledge. The Buddhist view is to not be afraid of the immensity and the magic of life, he continued in a celebratory voice. This is where Tantric Buddhism differs from the traditions of most human societies. In our practices, we accept everything. We enjoy and learn from the physical sciences, the arts, and also from the vast panorama of human experiences. In addition to enjoying and learning from all of these physical things, he continued, we also consciously explore the spiritual dimensions within ourselves and the universe. Don't seek to hide from the immensity of what you feel at sunset, he counseled me. Explore it and learn from it. Instead of simply labeling the feelings you experience at that time of day as bad and uncomfortable, merge your mind with them and become one with them. The great Buddhist teachers of the past have developed safe, effective and refined methods of meditation for moving our minds into the astral and causal dimensions. Once you have learned the order's secret, through the twin practices of meditation and mindfulness, Master Fuap continued to elaborate, you can safely learn to experience all of the different vibratory ranges in the universe. Eventually you will learn to combine and recombine these frequencies within your own mind. The endless combinations and recombinations that these frequencies can create are part of the infinite number of ecstasies that enlightened Buddhist masters experience every day. Interdimensional snowstorms. I asked Master Fuap if he would explain, in more physical terms, the high and low range frequencies he had mentioned to me. I thought I understood some of what he had said to me, but parts of his explanation still seemed difficult, if not impossible, for me to grasp. Master Fuap, would you please tell me a little more about these high and low range frequencies? Yes, of course. But first let me recite a mantra that sums up all of this. It is our Tibetan theory of relativity. Einstein expressed his theory of relativity as an equation. He said, E equals mc2. In Tibet we say it slightly differently. We say, Om Mani Padme Hum. What does that mean, Master Fuap? It means that enlightenment exists within all things. That is the Tibetan theory of relativity. Everything that exists outside us also exists within us, Master Fuap declared. This is one of the great mysteries of life. Enlightenment, which is the essence and the nexus of infinity and eternity, exists right here and now, within your own mind and heart. As I have told you before, enlightenment is inexpressible, it cannot be shared in words. Terms may be used to try to express what enlightenment is like, but none of them are absolute. Naturally, enlightenment can be alluded to. I can say that it is the highest ecstasy, the most perfect happiness, the deepest experience of peace, and all that is good and perfect in life. But that is only a way of talking. A way of beating around the bush, because none of the descriptions of enlightenment, no matter how simple, complex or elegant they may be, can cause us to experience it. However, While words may not be able to transmit the experience of enlightenment, they are useful for explaining some of the meditation techniques and methods that are used for gaining the experience of enlightenment. Master Thwap, I still don't see what all of this has to do with the different feelings that I experience in my life. I also don't understand how enlightenment and all the countless dimensions that you say exist can be both inside and outside me at the same time. Yes, yes, he replied. I was just getting to that. He shifted his position on the rock he was sitting on, and suddenly sat up very straight. The high and low frequencies that I was alluding to are the countless dimensional planes of light and darkness that exists both within and outside us. There is a perfect interrelationship between the inner and the outer worlds. They correspond to each other. As I told you before, life is a mystery. He continued, I cannot explain why this is so, any more than I can explain to you why the sun is in the sky, or why we, or any of this, exist in the first place. I am simply pointing out some things to you that I have experienced and come to know through tantric Buddhist practice, things that you may be unaware of. But in order for you to fully understand the frequencies of life, Master Thwap remarked, you must first understand that all existence is made up of vibrating, intelligent light. There are many types of inner and outer light, and they vibrate at different frequencies, he explained. The faster the vibration of light, the more ecstatic it is to experience. Each of us is born as a particular pattern of energy, Master Thwap said firmly. The pattern that each of us is, has been modified and added to by the experiences we had in our past lives. Why each of us is the particular energy pattern that we are is a mystery. It cannot be known here. All I know is that we have always existed as this pattern, and we always will. Our pattern can be modified, but it can never be completely changed. Why is that, Master Thwap? The whys of life are not the concern of the practitioners of Buddhist yoga. They are the concerns of philosophers. Practitioners of Buddhist yoga are interested in how the universe works, they study the intricacies of its structures, and with the knowledge that they gain from their studies they are able to have direct experiences of ecstasy and enlightenment that are far above the intellectual abstractions of philosophers. A chemist doesn't know why an atom exists. It isn't the chemist's job to know. What he or she does know about is how atomic and subatomic structures come together to create molecules and elements, and how varying combinations of elements can create new substances or alter old substances. In a similar way, a Buddhist yoga master doesn't know why the universe works the way it does, he knows how it works the way it does. With this knowledge, he can turn any experience or situation, no matter how obscure, difficult or painful, into something positive and enlightening. Master Thwap, perhaps you cannot explain why the energy pattern that is ourselves exists, but can you at least tell me a little bit more about it? Master Thwap smiled at me quizzically and replied, in Buddhist yoga we classify the different patterns of energy that sentient beings have as soul types. An almost endless array of vibratory soul types make up their beings that populate the universes and dimensions. The particular vibratory rate of a specific soul type is what causes it to incarnate within a specific universe and also within a specific body type. So in other words, Master Thwap, the types of souls that dogs have would be similar to each other, and the types of souls that human beings have would also be similar to each other, at least in terms of their vibratory frequencies. But the soul types of dogs and of people are very different. Is that right? Yes, he replied. You have it exactly right. Dogs are one specific soul type, human beings are another soul type. There are also much more subtle differences between the types of souls that different breeds of dogs have. And for that matter, there are differences between the soul types of dogs within a particular breed. Suddenly I began to get excited. I thought I was catching on. So then, Master Thwap, that means that the differences in the soul types within terriers, for example, wouldn't be as great as the difference between a German Shepherd and a Chihuahua, is that right? Precisely, he replied. He was smiling at me as if I had finally said something correctly. and all the soul types that incarnate in a particular dimension are somewhat similar. But to reincarnate in another dimension, he explained, taking the conversation to a deeper level, it is necessary for a being to radically repattern itself by significantly altering its vibratory rate, whereas to make lateral shifts within a dimension that a soul is reincarnating in doesn't require as radical a repatterning of the soul's basic vibratory rate. Master Fuap, I used to have a girlfriend who was very interested in reincarnation. She told me that every soul, when it is first created out of the cosmic flux, starts out in a basic form, like a rock, and that eventually, through the process of reincarnating in millions of lives, it moves forward and experiences being a plant, then an animal, and finally it incarnates as a person. She said that in each kingdom into which a soul incarnates, mineral, plant, animal and human, it starts at the bottom of the evolutionary ladder, and gradually, through the process of reincarnation, works its way up to the top, once it reaches the highest level of evolution. She compared it to getting your first job at a company, working on the production line, and then, throughout the course of your life, working your way up the corporate ladder, until you eventually became the president of the corporation. She said that every soul does that, and that eventually every soul reaches enlightenment. Does reincarnation really work that way? Not entirely, he replied. I know this is a very common explanation of the process of reincarnation, but to be honest with you, it is much too simplistic. I believe that your girlfriend was referring to the commonly held theory that each soul begins its cosmic journey by reincarnating in the simplest forms of life. Then, according to this theory, each soul takes subsequently more advanced incarnations in different bodies, always moving towards higher stages of evolution. Eventually, every soul reaches the highest levels of incarnation, becomes enlightened, and dissolves back into nirvana. That is probably the theory she was alluding to. But if that's not how it really is, then how does it work, Master Fuap? Normally we start out as a specific soul type, and we remain in that soul type forever, he replied. We evolve as that soul type, but we don't ever change soul types, we just develop the soul type that we have. Now I was confused. He had lost me again. Master Fuap, I don't understand. Why would we stay in the same soul type forever? Why shouldn't we evolve through the process of reincarnation, and all eventually become enlightened? Because we get used to being who we are, and we are drawn back repeatedly to reincarnate in the dimension we have become accustomed to, he replied with a hearty laugh. Our soul type is our basic structure, Master Fuap continued, and it becomes very familiar to us. It is very hard for us to change it because in order to do so we literally have to erase the multi-life being we have gotten used to being. That is why so few souls in the cosmos ever become enlightened. They become attached to the soul type that they are and also to the dimension in which they reincarnate. Master Fuap, now I'm totally confused, I said in exasperation. I thought everyone became enlightened once they had gone through enough incarnations. That is what my girlfriend told me. No, he responded with a cherubic smile and a soft chuckle, it is not usually so. And now, if you will permit me, I will confuse you a little more. Master Fuap didn't say anything for several minutes. He seemed to be collecting his thoughts, or perhaps he was creating a sense of drama by pausing before his next revelation. My young friend, he finally began. There has never been a time in which you and I have not existed, nor will there ever be a time when we will not be. This is not only the case for ourselves, but for all of the sentient beings that exist in all of the far-flung universes that comprise eternity. Think of life as a snowstorm. As far as the eye can see, there is nothing but beautiful, white, falling snow. In my analogy, each soul is like a snowflake in the endless white snowstorm of infinity. The winds of karma, he continued, blow each soul back and forth, from one life to another, within the same, endlessly white, interdimensional snowstorm. For a brief moment we are alive in this world, and then the winds of our karma change direction, and we are blown into yet another life, in another part of the same storm. Almost all souls stay within the same soul typing, He continued. Naturally, they will evolve and devolve from lifetime to lifetime, speeding up and slowing down their basic vibratory rates, according to the actions that they perform and the thought forms they hold, in each of the incarnations they pass through. But on rare occasions there are souls that consciously redirect and repattern themselves, and change their soul types, while their deepest essence remains the same, if they have the knowledge, power and in order to become enlightened, Master Fuap explained, it is necessary for a soul to repattern itself thousands of times. This is what advanced Buddhist yoga is really all about. It is the science of repatterning the soul within an incarnate body, and also in the Buddho planes, which the soul passes through in between incarnations. If you learn and practice the science of repatterning, then you can literally change your soul type within your current body structure. If you did this during your current incarnation, then naturally, at the time of your death, your soul would change inclination and you would reincarnate in a different dimension. You would then be with soul types that were similar to the new soul type you had just repatterned yourself to be. Let me sum this up for you, Master Fuap said with a serious look on his face. Very few beings become enlightened. By that I mean that very few souls have the inclination, knowledge and power to overcome their attachment to their multi-life form and to the dimension they have incarnated in for so long. To become enlightened, a soul must transcend its attachment to its familiar form and dimension, and go through a series of repatternings, over the course of tens of thousands of incarnations, until that soul finally incarnates in an enlightened soul type. Then, once it has incarnated in the form of an enlightened soul type, it must go through the training and discipline of evolving even further beyond that soul type to becoming nirvana, which, of course, is beyond soul types and repatterning. Try to understand, he said, looking concerned, that it is not better to be an enlightened soul type, or to attain enlightenment for that matter, than it is to do or be anything else. It is a personal choice that the essence of our being makes for reasons that cannot be known here. What does matter, he continued, is getting to the high end of the spectrum of the soul type and dimension that you are currently incarnating in. Then you will be happy. Becoming enlightened isn't everything, because enlightenment is everything. All souls are, in their essence, enlightened, he continued to explain. Just as one of your body's cells contains the DNA of your entire species within it, so too within each soul, regardless of its soul type, there is a spiritual type of DNA. Within this spiritual DNA is enlightenment. The goal of life and of reincarnation is not to become enlightened, but simply to be and to live life fully, and to have endless experiences in eternity. You may be drawn to the experience of enlightenment. If that is the case, then you will learn to repattern yourself in an upward ascension of vibratory soul types. If that is your fate, it is both challenging and happy, because unlike most beings, you will eventually experience nirvana directly, and as a result you will gain the knowledge, and experience the ecstasy that is beyond expression. In an interdimensional snowstorm, one snowflake does not have a better journey than another snowflake does. They are simply different. Souls group together according to their vibratory rate. That is why those souls that seek enlightenment associate with and are drawn to similar souls, and are even more drawn to enlightened souls who can teach them the art of repatterning. I had become so involved in listening to Master Fuap's explanation of reincarnation that I hadn't even noticed that the sun was beginning to set. I suddenly realized that I was freezing cold. At that moment it occurred to me that I still had to snowboard down the mountain before it became any colder and darker. I knew it would be fully dark before long, and I wasn't sure that even if I left immediately, I would be able to make it all the way down. In my thoughts I imagined that I would be trapped on the mountain in the freezing Himalayan night. Don't worry, Master Fuap said, as if he were reading my thoughts. I will ride down with you on your board and help guide you. And so the two of us held on to each other as we sped down the mountain, cutting rapidly in and out of the deep powder, on my small 4.5-foot-long snowboard, two snowflakes, blowing through eternity in an endless interdimensional snowstorm. Chapter 14, Hierarchical versus Relational Snowboarding. Master Fuap and I had spent most of the late morning and afternoon climbing up a steep, rock-strewn mountain pass. The terrain was difficult but spectacular. We stopped to rest at the top of the pass. I estimated that we were at around 18,000 feet. I could barely breathe. I lay back on the ground, listening to my lungs sucking in the cold mountain air and to the loud pounding of my heart. Looking up, I noticed that Master Fuap had assumed a cross-legged position, was sitting up very straight, and had closed his eyes. His breathing was calm and regular. His face was serene. An aura of sparkling golden light surrounded his head and shoulders. After a few minutes, my breathing began to normalize. A sharp wind had kicked up, bringing a cold chill with it. I sat up and zipped my parka, which I had unzipped only minutes before while climbing because I had felt so hot. There was hardly any noise to be heard anywhere. The only audible sound was the soft whine of the wind rushing up and down the canyons of snow. Smoky gray storm clouds that had drifted in from the northwest had started to filter out some of the sun's light and warmth. I was about to ask Master Fuap if he thought a storm was coming when, unexpectedly, he opened his eyes and directed his gaze toward me. At this time of year, Master Fuap began, speaking in a very measured way, snow showers can come up quite unexpectedly. I shouldn't worry, though. I know where there is a cave just on the other side of this pass. As I looked out beyond the valley, the Himalayas seemed to stretch on forever. Mountains of endless snow melted into each other as far as I could see. The pure whiteness of the scene was occasionally broken by dark mountain crags so windswept that all the snow had been blown off their peaks, revealing the stark black rock beneath. We descended for about an hour and a half, walking carefully on the slippery, snow-covered ground. About halfway down to the rhododendron forest, we made an abrupt left turn off the trail we had been walking on, and started walking down a smaller path. The path wound around the mountain toward the south. After about 10 minutes, Master Fuap stopped walking and paused, apparently to take his bearings. Then we started walking again. In a matter of minutes, we came to the mouth of a large cave. The opening was about 15 feet high. Beyond the mouth of the cave there was only blackness. Master Fuap gestured for me to follow him in, and walking carefully in his footsteps I entered the cave. After we had walked about 30 steps into the cave, Master Fuap stopped. He told me to turn around and sit down next to him on his right. As soon as I turned around, I could see again. Some of the outside light was reflected back into the cave by snow that had formed in a ledge around the cave's mouth. Sitting down, I noticed that we were resting on solid rock. The snow didn't seem to have drifted very far into the cave. I was surprised by how warm it was inside the cave. I realized that most of the cold I had been feeling prior to entering the cave was not the real air temperature, but was caused by the Himalayan wind chill factor. We sat in silence for several minutes before Master Fuap spoke to me. Sitting in the cave, I felt a familiar feeling. Usually after a long day of snowboarding, after I have packed up my gear and the sun has begun to set, I look up at the mountains that I have been snowboarding all day long, and I experience an exquisite sense of peace and well-being. I feel relaxed and happy, and nothing else really matters much. That was exactly how I felt while sitting next to Master Fuap in the Himalayan cave that afternoon. There are many caves like this one in the Himalayas, Master Fuap began. These are the hermitages of the great Buddhist masters of our order. Members of the Raycourts Fuas have been meditating in caves like these for thousands of years. These caves are places of power. They are located along interdimensional power lines and energy vortexes. Because of the dimensions they intersect with, it is very easy to meditate here and to understand concepts that might otherwise be difficult, if not impossible, to grasp in other locations. Many of the universities in your country are similarly placed, he said in a matter-of-fact way. They are built on locations that intersect with dimensions of great clarity. Teaching and learning in locations of that type are naturally much easier. If the same university were placed just a few miles away on a different site, without the proper interdimensional openings for clarity and learning, it would be much harder for the students to learn there. In life, location is everything. We know a little bit more about this in the East than you do in the West. Most of the time, when the officers of an Eastern corporation find a prospective location for their corporate headquarters, Master Fuap continued, they hire a Taoist priest who specializes in interdimensional openings to check out the proposed site. If he feels the location from the corporation is not appropriate, from an energy flow perspective, then he will recommend that the corporation not build there, and the company will choose a new location. A great deal of what you would call success in a person's life, Master Fuap continued, comes from the ability to choose the right. There are physical locations on the earth where it is easier to meditate, to study, to learn, to make corporate decisions, to fight battles, and to see into other worlds. What gives a physical location a particular type of power are the dimensional lines that run through it. Throughout the earth there are lines of power, Master Fuap continued to explain. There are many different types of these astral lines and they carry different types of energy along them. Think of the earth as being superimposed on a grid of horizontal lines. Dimensional space and locations are superimposed over horizontal grids of light and energy. These grids are points of egress, points that open into other dimensional realities in which there is much more prana available. For instance, Master Fuap asked, did you know that there are specific energy lines running through the earth that open up to artistic and musical dimensions? If a composer or an artist lives and works in a place that has those types of lines running through it, then it will be much easier for him to create great works of art or music. If the same composer or artist lived and worked in a place without those lines, his work would be much harder, and he probably wouldn't create much great art at all. While most people may not consciously know about energy lines, grid planes, interdimensional vortexes and how all this works, they unconsciously use their intuition, which I call the second attention, to find and use just right locations when they need them to achieve success. For example, when the site for a great university was originally chosen, the founding fathers often intuitively picked a just right spot for learning. Standing in that spot, even if it was only a forest or a meadow at the time, their bodies could feel that this would be a good place for students to learn. To be honest with you, people who are successful in life have at least unconsciously learned to use their second attention to choose the just right spots they need to do their work in. Thousands of years ago, the members of the Raycourts Fuas roamed the East looking for the just right places to practice meditation and other psychic arts, Master Fuap continued. They discovered many places of enlightenment, places of power, places of healing, places of seeing and places for teaching. Since these were their primary interests, these were the types of places they sought out and discovered. This particular cave is a place of seeing, Master Fuap explained. It is easy to see other worlds and dimensions from here, and it is also easy to understand complicated occult concepts here. Naturally, once you have understood a difficult metaphysical concept here, that knowledge will accompany you when you leave this cave, in much the same way that you will retain a concept you have learned at school after you have left your school and gone home for the evening. At this point, I interrupted Master Fuap. He had aroused my curiosity, as I somehow suspected was his intention. Master Fuap, I asked, is there a particular mountain that is better to snowboard on than any other mountain in the world? I tried to make the tone of my question seem light and conversational, so he wouldn't suspect how much I really wanted to know the answer. Having traveled with Master Fuap now for some weeks, I had learned that his sense of humor was bigger than the Himalayas, and that if he even half suspected that I wanted to know something badly enough, he would deliberately not tell me, just to drive me crazy. Master Fuap remained silent for several minutes, considering my question before responding. I assumed that, as usual, he was going to prolong my agony for as long as possible, milking the situation for all it was worth. He surprised me, however, with the directness of his answer. Yes, he began, there is only one absolutely just right mountain for snowboarding in the world, although there are certainly many other mountains that are very good for snowboarding. Where might that mountain be, Master Fuap? I inquired as nonchalantly as possible, trying as best as I could to mask my rapidly increasing excitement. When can we go there? I asked a little too loudly. I could no longer conceal the excitement in my voice.